From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. There is rarely a slow time in California politics, but when you throw in a presidential election year, a massive state budget shortfall, protests at college campuses, and an ongoing fight for reproductive rights, the pace does pick up, and it can be pretty tough to distill all that's happening in state politics. One resource to break it all down is Politico's California Playbook, and we welcome back its co-author, Laura Cordy, with the latest in politics, which includes some recent wins for California. Hey, Laura.
Hey, Vicky. Thanks for having me.
So I want to start off with the biggest ongoing development that's taking place, and that's at college campuses. You know, pro-Palestinian protests and counter-protests in response to Israel's war against Hamas. There are universities like USC, UCLA, up north, Cal Poly Humboldt. We actually had students from Humboldt on our show last week. How are California's politicians responding to anti-war protests at college campuses in the state?
Yeah, we've seen a variety of responses from the state's leaders witnessing this violence, this tension happening on California's campuses. I think most notably, we're looking at how Governor Gavin Newsom has responded to all this. You know, since the October 7th attack on Israel, he's been pretty vocal about, you know, combating hate on college campuses. And he actually asked university leaders to, you know, take another look at their student handbooks and make sure that their student code of conduct is, you know, up to snuff while we're dealing with this kind of tension on campuses. But since the, outburst at UCLA, the governor, you know, has been relatively low-key about his response. You know, he did send in California Highway Patrol officers when the moment called for it. You know, he said actually following the arrest last week that the limited and delayed campus law enforcement response was unacceptable and it demands answers. And that kind of echoes what other, you know, lawmakers have said. We just had last week Republican legislative leaders calling for more accountability from the administration. They want to take away students' Cal grants, their education funding, if they were, you know, found to participate in violence or acts of intimidation on campus. And they want to do that through the state's budget process. That's pretty punitive. And with a Democratic-dominated legislature, it's unlikely to get anywhere. But I think far and away, you have a lot of leaders in California saying, how did this happen? And they're really looking to hold administrators accountable. So I think we'll see that, you know, narrative play out for months, even after these protests die down.
Well, and it also seems like these responses, there are responses, but they differ according to party line.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You know, Democrats in California have been very supportive of Israel since October 7th, keeping in line with, you know, Joe Biden, keeping in line with Joe Biden, and how, you know, he says we're always an ally of Israel. But, you know, you do see, I think, Republicans get a little bit more aggressive. I'm thinking about the fact that, you know, you had Senate candidate Steve Garvey come out after the UCLA protests, and he called it terrorism. You know, he called the students who are participating in these acts of intimidation and, you know, shouting these anti-Semitic, you know, terms, he called them terrorists. And that's been a far more aggressive than what Democrats have done. You've also seen some Democrats, you know, express a little bit of dismay at the fact that there are arrests happening, student protests. You know, every time we have one of these statements come out, we also have Democrats say, you know, free speech is important, the First Amendment is important, but it can never lead to hate or intimidation and violence. And so it's this uneasy tension, I think, for a lot of people between free expression and combating, you know, real hate and real intimidation.
Has Senate candidate Adam Schiff, has he said anything?
Yeah, Adam Schiff has said a few things. You know, he definitely speaks out against anti-Semitism. He's been very vocally supportive of Israel for quite a while. He did come out last week and say that, you know, violence, vandalism, and anti-Semitic harassment, they're not free speech. And engaging in those behaviors, those engaging in those behaviors should be held accountable. So you will see, I think it's important for a lot of these California politicians to make a statement and let people know that they're watching this, because it's really impacting, like you noted, all parts of the state, mm-hmm. from Humboldt down to UCLA.
Yeah. Another big development, and it even happened within the last week, what Governor Newsom has been very vocal on is reproductive rights. And about a week and a half ago, Governor Newsom, along with the Legislative Women's Caucus, they came out saying that they're crafting legislation to allow Arizona doctors to perform abortions in California. And that stems from, we talked about it on Insight, it follows an Arizona Supreme Court ruling in favor of a Civil War era ban on almost all abortions. Mm-hmm. But we had this convo last Monday. In the last 7 days, the Arizona State Legislature has now stepped in. They passed a repeal of that 1864 right. ban. The governor has signed it into law. So where does California's involvement stand? Was this legislative effort wasted energy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they would say, no, it's not wasted energy, because I think it's important, one, for California to be the kind of standard bearer across the country and say, listen, we're a center for reproductive freedom. But yeah, there's some whiplash happening here with the Arizona law. You know, Governor Newsom's office says that even though they did pass and the governor did sign this repeal of the Civil War era law, there's still going to be some lag time between when the first law is implemented and when the repeal is implemented. And so they want during that time, you know, care to be continuous. You know, as I'm sure you guys talked about, as we've all talked about, the legislation that the governor is still championing is, you know, would help Arizona doctors get licensed in California more quickly so that they can treat their patients in California while they can't in Arizona. So I think it's just one of many ways that California is trying to be a pro-abortion rights state. And, you know, we have lots of measures that, you know, cater to out-of-state patients. And so this is just another tool in the tool belt.
Yeah, the state even has a website dedicated to it. It's abortion.ca.gov, which has information and resources for people all over the country if they want to seek that type of care. Mm-hmm. Looking ahead to the November election, I mean, campaigns obviously gaining a lot of momentum. We're about 6 months away. Reporting by your colleague, Melanie Mason, she dove into control of the House and how it can hinge on competitive California districts. There's about a half dozen. Mm-hmm. Which seats are parties investing the most in right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for, you know, months, both parties have been really focused on the Central Valley and Southern California seats. I think two of the seats people will be familiar with are David Valadao's seat and John Duarte's seat in the Central Valley. Both those were swing seats last cycle in 2022, and both Democrats lost those seats. And so that was a big deal. And both those Democrats are now back again. You have Adam Gray with John Duarte and Rudy Salas with David Valadao, really pouring a lot of resources into those districts trying to swing it back towards the Democrats. And, you know, there's many other seats in the Southern California region we're looking at. One folks will probably be familiar with is Katie Porter's seat. Of course, she did not run for her House seat again because she was running for Senate. And since she did not make it past the primary, she is unfortunately going to be out of elected office here in a couple of months. But her seat is being fought over by Democratic State Senator Dave Minn and returning Republican Scott Baugh. And that's always been a purple district. And I think that folks are, they've always poured a lot of resources into that, both parties. And so that's going to be a similar fight this year.
Given that this spans from the Central Valley to Southern California, what stands out to you about these areas of California? Are they more purple?
Yeah, they're definitely more purple. And I think you have, you know, Republicans are trying to appeal to a certain, you know, moderate base there. I think what's really interesting, I followed the David Valadao seat pretty closely. And, you know, he was one of the few Republicans who voted to impeach Donald Trump. And that did not get him removed from office. You know, I don't know if he would agree with being called a moderate, but he's certainly not a fan of Donald Trump and has tried to stay away from the sort of Trump movement. And that's worked for him in that district. And so I think the challenge for Democrats in some of these seats is figuring out a way to, you know, appeal to the more moderate centrist voters who might be frustrated with the ruling Democratic class. I mean, you have to, you know, point out the fact that gas prices are high, cost of living is high. And so running as a Democrat when you have these issues can be a little bit tough. And so both sides have to find a way to appeal to the middle of the road, so to speak.
On the presidential election front, last week, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s campaign, they announced that he'll be on the California ballot. He's going to be running with the American Independent Party. But California, I believe, would only be one of a handful of states where he's actually on the ballot. So what is the motivation here to doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Robert F. Kennedy wants to give Robert F. Kennedy Jr., forgive me, he's not his father. You know, I think he wants to give people another option. And there's a lot of frustration with the, you know, bipartisanship in the two-party system right now. And so even though he is, you know, on the ballot in only a few states, I think far and away, it's all about gaining momentum and giving people another option, even if that option probably has a really unlikely chance of getting to the White House.
Yeah. There was also a dramatic recount for a congressional district in the South Bay Silicon Valley, District 16. It was quite dramatic. What is going on with that?
Yeah, hopefully the biggest drama is over at this point. But yeah, in Anna Eshoo's seat, there was actually a two-way tie for second place. I almost said three-way tie. But it's you know, the first time since our top two system that it looked like we were going to have three people in the general election, which is unheard of in the modern era.
And all Democrats.
And all Democrats, right, which is super interesting. It was a two-way tie, but there was actually a local entrepreneur with ties to former San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo, who stepped in and asked for a recount. And Democratic Assembly Member Evan Lowe ended that recount with just five more votes than Joe Simidian. And so he is going to be heading to the runoff with Sam Liccardo. It was really tense. You know, we caught up with Evan Lowe a few times during the primary vote counting period. And he, you know, seemed in good spirits, but also kind of joked that, like, he was trying to stay off his phone. He was trying to stay away from text messages. It's hard to, I think, be a legislator while also your political fate kind of hangs in the balance. So I'm sure he's glad to have it over with, and I'm sure he's certainly glad to be headed to the general.
Yeah, I think that is the true definition of a nail biter, like down to the last
Yeah, votes. There are no nails left.
Yeah. Yeah. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Laura Cordy, co-author of Politico's California Playbook. Okay, in the final minutes that we have, let's look ahead to later in the month. Why is Governor Newsom traveling to the Vatican?
Yeah, Governor Newsom is going to go, you know, deliver remarks before the Pope later this month. And it's about climate change, essentially. And this is something we've seen the governor, travel for frequently. He recently went to China. You know, he's been invited overseas several times to speak about this issue, partly because, you know, California is both a leader in climate change, but also, you know, the kind of a victim of climate change, maybe to use a kind of drastic word. But, you know, Newsom is expected to talk about the impact of California's wildfires, flood, and drought, and expected to be one of the few leaders who actually gets to speak directly to the Pope. So, you know, for the governor, it's really a chance to kind of showcase his, you know, political chops and also California's political chops on the global stage. And so we're excited to see what happens. That's, I believe, happening later next week.
And also later next week, the California GOP, they're having their spring convention in Burlingame. Mm-hmm. What stands out to you about this?
This is something that we wrote about recently. I believe it's South Dakota Governor.
Yes.
Yeah, South Dakota Governor.
Kristi Noem.
Kristi Noem, forgive me. Forgive me.
In the midst of a media firestorm over,
right,
detailing in her book that how she killed her 14-month-old dog.
Right. Yeah. So Kristi Noem is scheduled to speak at the California GOP convention. And that keynote speaker was announced before this news came out about, you know, a chapter of her book in which she details, you know, shooting her 14-month-old puppy. And the details in there, I think she tries to describe herself as being very, like, strong and able to make tough decisions. But a lot of people took this to be kind of shocking. They were very upset by this, including some Republicans. And so we're watching for whether or not this impacts her speech at the GOP convention. I know she's had some other events canceled since this came out. I guess it just depends on how much Republicans love their dogs versus Kristi Noem. We'll have to see. But that's some awkward looming tension over the convention.
Finally, let's end with some good news that I think Democratic leaders are celebrating. California has had a population rebound. And also coming on the heels of that population boost, California's tourism, their numbers, they're back and it's at an all-time high.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big deal for California. During the pandemic, obviously, tourism, one of our main, you know, economic exports, really dwindled. And the governor and other Democrats have taken hits for this, right? You know, people saying that California's economic viability really took a hit. There's always all these pieces about, you know, San Francisco not being able to bounce back. So this was absolutely something that was exciting for the governor and for Democrats to show that California's, you know, not only back to where it was, but doing better than pre-pandemic levels. Most of the major hubs like San Diego, Los Angeles saw a complete rebound from 2019 numbers. San Francisco, however, still trying to catch up. It's about at 97% of what it's, you know, tourism spending as it was in 2019. So good news overall. But, you know, we'll have to see what the next year brings.
Laura, as always, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Vicky.
Laura Cordy is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook. Up next, a decade ago, professional soccer kicked off in Sacramento. We'll take a look back at the success of Sac Republic FC both on and off the field. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.